me tell you a little bit about our guest tonight. Everyone who's coming on tonight is on for the very first time. And I saw Roger Aronoff on a program with Claire Lopez, his program, with Claire Lopez and Tom McInerney, General Tom McInerney. And this is the big deal. Let's see here. Where have I? Oh, here we are, right there. Now, all right. Roger Aronoff is executive director and editor of the CCNS. Now, that's also, he's former editor of Accuracy in Media. He's worked as a journalist, a TV producer, writer, and distributor. He's written and produced and directed video documentaries that include Confronting Iraq, Conflict and Hope, The Clinton Legacy, and TWA 800, The Search for the Truth. Two of those films, Confronting Iraq in 2005 and TWA 800 from 2002, have won top prizes at WorldFest, the Houston International Film Festival. He's appeared as a guest commentator on National Public Radio, Air America, CNN. That's the program, not the actual airline. Fox News, CNBC's Kudlow and Company, Court TV, Russia Today, and CTV, that's Canadian TV, among many others. The National Security Alert, Episode 8, with General Tom McInerney and Claire Lopez, Citizens Commission on National Security. Now, you're going to learn why he started the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. You're going to hear it from him, but I'll just drop a tiny little nugget here, and it is only this. If I have the number correct, 15 people have come forward stating that they were told to stand down at Benghazi. And wait till you hear who organized the hit. Was this person paid? All sorts of things like that. So without further ado, let us welcome to the Bridge of the Ark for the first time, Roger Aronoff. Sorry about the delay, sir. Stuff happens.
No problem, John. Thank you. Great to be with you and your listeners tonight, and appreciate the introduction.
You really have a wonderful body of work here, and it takes some real dedication to hang with something like this, as you have. So I would like to begin pretty much wherever is the most logical place, which is why and how you started the Citizens Commission on Benghazi in 2013 and eventually the Citizens Commission on National Security as of 2018. So over to you.
Okay, well, I could give the long version, or I'll do the medium version. But I was the editor of Accuracy in Media at that time, had followed in the footsteps of Reed Irvine, who was a mentor of mine. And anyway, we were watching, following what had happened on September 11th at night in Benghazi in 2012, and there had been about seven different investigations in Congress and the Accountability Review Board at the State Department, and they were all seeming to take just a little piece of the whole story, and it was clear there was a lot more to it, and it needed some kind of bringing it all together. So I had interviewed Admiral Ace Lyons for a show I was hosting at that time, and talked about that, and then I was at an event where Ace was there, Tom McInerney, Paul Vallely, and I had already come up with this idea that we needed to have some kind of investigation that was outside of Congress and bringing people with various backgrounds. So that's what we did. Claire Lopez, who you're familiar with, former CIA officer, those three men I just mentioned, Air Force General, Army General, and Admiral, former Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet, Ace Lyons, and then we brought a number of other people like Steve Emerson, Pete Hoekstra, the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Alan West, the three founding members of Special Operations Speaks, and several others that we put our heads together and we set up, you know, like the field of dreams, you build it and they will come. And that's what started happening. People who hadn't spoken with anyone about Benghazi before and came forward to us and sort of used us as a platform to tell what they had seen happen. And that included the three gentlemen who wrote the book 13 Hours. It included Admiral Chuck Kubik, who had been an admiral during the Gulf War in the early 2000s and After he left the military, he stayed behind, and he was working in Libya, doing building bridges and doing engineering jobs. And he was approached by the Libyan military people that said that Gaddafi was prepared to abdicate under a white flag of truce. And he wanted him to get that message to the Pentagon, to the White House, which he did. And this was just days before the attacks began in Libya to get rid of Gaddafi. Now, we all know Gaddafi had been a terrorist, had been a bad guy, horrible, the La Belle discotheque and, the airplane that he brought down. But what happened after Saddam was caught and Gaddafi came out and said, I'm getting rid of my weapons of mass destruction and getting out of that business. And he became sort of an ally fighting al-Qaeda. So we have, if you go to our website, which I'll refer to now, which is ccnationalsecurity.org, there's a tab at the top, Benghazi, and we have all of our press conferences, our reports, all of it's in there, and it lays it out. It's quite detailed, but bottom line is, let me put it this way, there were like five scandals wrapped into it. The first one was going to war against Gaddafi in the first place, and what we did during that one in our interim report was called How the U.S. Switched Sides in the War on Terror. And Chris Stevens, he was over there to he was receiving the arms that were being given to al-Qaeda to go against Gaddafi. And so that was something that we did. And then the other issues were not beefing up the security in Benghazi, despite hundreds of requests for it that Hillary claimed she never saw. And then you had the day of where, the question was, Panetta got up and spoke, and he said we didn't have enough time to get, any planes, any assets there to do anything about it. And he also said we didn't have good enough intelligence. Well, Tom McInerney, who you referred to, had led the attacks into Libya in 1986. And anyone could tell you that from one of the bases like Sigonella, they could have been there in 2 hours or so to buzz what was going on at the CIA annex, which was 1 mile away from the special mission compound, where two people were killed at each place, a lot more injured. And yes, they had been given specific warnings that this was going to be happening. And so we did not provide this support. And then after that, so you've got those, and then you've got the media part of it. This was 2 months before the 2012 election, and they wanted to help make sure that Obama kept his job. So they basically completely played it down, and they had all the evidence they needed about what had gone on and why. And it really had a lot to do with bringing the Muslim Brotherhood to power across North Africa and supporting Iran in that part of the Middle East. So from there, we spent 4 years doing this, gathering information, putting the reports, holding press conferences. And our timing was fortunate when we were doing our last report, because it came one day after Trey Gowdy, who, when he was originally picked to head the select committee, we thought that was great. But at the end of the day, he basically said, here we have 800 pages, read it for yourself and draw your own conclusions. Well, we didn't think that was a satisfactory answer, and we laid out the narrative that I think stands up to this day as the most comprehensive, naming names, and it's all there, and you can go where I just referred you to, ccnationalsecurity.org, and go to the Benghazi tab. So after that, I wanted to continue on. There's so many other national security issues, not all of them involving foreign affairs, such as, the porous border we have. There are many other things, election integrity. So there's a lot of other issues that we all wanted to keep working on. So we ended up forming our own new 501c3, no longer part of Accuracy in Media. And we've been tackling other issues, and we've got some, you know, plans for the future that we're working on right now as well. But we continually posting articles. Lawrence Sellin, another of your regular guests, is one of our members, and he puts out some great articles and, you know, showing what China, their involvement in the pandemic and all that. So there's so many different threads we could get into, but for that, for now, I will toss it back to you. John?
So the whole thing, I mean, this is just weird. So it appears that the whole thing, the whole attack on the compound, let's call it that, this was known about beforehand, that this was going to happen?
This was known beforehand that this was going to happen. And, so they immediately, famously, Susan Rice came out on the five shows, Sunday shows, right after it happened, claiming that it was all based on that YouTube video, you know, about the Muslims, that was what did have a big effect in Egypt, perhaps, but it wasn't there. And this was already a planned terrorist attack on this compound. And so really, and again, if you see, you go back and look at the wires, the emails, the requests, we this is not a tolerable situation. And the people that they had as their security were basically jihadists themselves, and they were trusting them. And, you know, they were very clear that this was an unsustainable situation.
What about the stand down orders? We started hearing pretty early in this. And by the way, I had the honor of speaking with Admiral Ace Lyons and Claire Lopez over the course of the years, which are considerable now, about 8.5 years. And that whole thing looked so strange to me. But I heard a story almost immediately about, I thought it was the captain of an aircraft carrier who was going to launch jets anyway, and he was removed from his command. Is there any truth to that, or was that just a wild rumor?
I have to say, I know what you're referring to, and I can't speak to it specifically enough at this moment.
That's okay.
To tell you,
it's okay.
There's so many details to it, but sorry about that. But okay.
No worries. It's just a detail, nothing more.
Right.
There were a bunch of people that wanted to go in. We know that. We know that we had air power well within striking range. What, the base in Italy, wasn't it? And
yes.
So who?
Spain, Sigonella. Yeah, they definitely had the assets in range that easily could have been there, even if they weren't expecting anything. And again, it was September 11th. That's another reason they should have been on high alert. And, you know, if you saw it again in the movie, 13 hours, I mean, they had something on the wall that warned of this. And so it was really huge dereliction of duty. And again, being the left, being the Democrats, the media covered for them, and, you know, law enforcement let them off the hook. Congress pretty much too, unfortunately.
Well, this sounds, to use a slight colloquial expression, this sounds like a hit. I'm wondering who ordered it, who paid for it, and who executed it.
Well, look, I think it was jihadists that were behind it. You know, I know some believe it was Iran, some, you know, but we let it happen because we wanted to make it look like Libya had become a success story. And so they, you know, I don't think Obama or Hillary wanted this to happen. You know, I think they just didn't do what they could have done to prevent it, mitigate it, or, you know, protect the people who were there.
And so why the stand-down order?
Well, yeah, the stand-down order, I mean, there's no good logical reason for it, but they just kind of panicked, I guess. I mean, they did not want us to go in there and take these people out. I mean, they were working with, again, you know, I, as Claire has talked about and we talk about in our report, I mean, there was a clear switch to support Muslim Brotherhood and, you know, Al-Qaeda. And so we were on the wrong side of this. And again, where the title of our first report is How America Switched Sides in the War on Terror. And so, yeah, we're pointing those fingers and we lay it out. You know, there have been a lot of stories about it, but I'm a story and I'm sticking to it.
Understood.
Yeah.
Does Soleimani feature in any of this?
Pardon me?
Soleimani, the...
The Iranian general? Not that I'm aware of. No, I don't recall that.
Okay. I just wondered. I don't have the timeline laid out in front of me, but I was just wondering the delivery of all that cash in various denominations and currencies to the tune of, seemed like a few billion dollars that was sent by the Obama administration to Iran. I just wonder what that was paying
right.
for.
Yeah, I don't think that was related to Benghazi. And,
okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, several of these former U.S. service members who witnessed the unfolding events that night revealed that the attackers in Benghazi were led by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Quds Force, under the command of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani.
Right.
Now, this is according to an article in the AmericanReport.org. Yes, fanatical Islamic revolutionary. Yeah, over to you, sorry.
That was not our finding. We do not think it was Iranian-backed. We looked at that, and we absolutely do not believe this was an Iranian operation. I mean, look, Claire, we think Iran backed, they were one of the primary backers of 9/11, and Claire, you know, has been involved in legal cases that document that. And, you know, we have not been in any way soft on Iran. We just, the evidence didn't point to that as far as we're concerned.
I
know there are others who do believe that, but we don't.
All right. Well, it's a complex situation.
Yeah.
So perhaps, now we've got a break coming up here in a little over 2 minutes, but we can still chat a little bit. Who are we thinking this served, that this attack took place at all? Some people have theorized that, I started my theory about 2 minutes into the video I was viewing on the night that it happened. And I said, that looks like a gun deal that went bad to me. And look, they brought their little like Al-Qaeda flag with them and everything. This looks like, you know, if I didn't know better, and I don't, I would say this looks pretty staged. How do you respond to an outrageous statement?
Look, definitely part of what was going on there was Stevens was there gathering up weapons that had been supplied there and then that... these man pads and basically ship them on through Turkey into Syria to basically the idea was to support the Free Syrian Army, but ultimately it led to the creation of ISIS and supported Al-Qaeda there as well. So, again, how much of this was planned and how much of this got out of control, I mean, it's pretty awful what they did and didn't do on its own, but there definitely was an element of that of moving the weapons around that were in Libya at the time.
Understood. It's interesting, the human intelligence warnings, it has been reported, started on June 2nd, 2012, and steadily became more serious, and then started coming in via much higher level sources, former U.S. military officials told the American Report. Ladies and gentlemen, we are visiting with our first-time guest, Roger Aronoff. A-R-O-N-O-F-F, Aronoff. And at some point along the timeline, all will be revealed, but it comes out really, really slowly, and it comes out at such a low ebb that by the time the story fully comes out, people have moved on. I mean, people are still theorizing about the Kennedy assassination and so forth, which was quite obviously an inside job and not the work of a lone gunman with a contract Italian Mauser. The Italians hated the Nazis, and they weren't going to build a very good rifle for him, and they didn't. That's the Mannlicher Cartano. We'll be back. Stand by. Now, back to Mr. Roger Aronoff. Roger, I got to tell you, I don't understand why this happened. Well, the big question is, WHY, question mark, just because they decided to attack this, and it's been called the CIA Annex, but I understand the actual Annex was down the road. I don't know. I wasn't there. And I've heard it referred to as a compound. I've heard it referred to as a safe house. I've heard there were weapons there. I heard there weren't weapons there. I've heard all kinds of stuff, and everybody else has too. What's your general appraisal of why this happened? Just to make a statement on September 11th, what happened before then, before that date, that fateful date in 2012, September 11, 2012, what had happened that would trigger an attack like this?
Well, look, there was the so-called Arab Spring, and this is, you remember what was going on in Egypt, and so, again, we believe that Obama made a decision to basically turn over Northern Africa, which is Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, to the Muslim Brotherhood. Whether that's an ideological alignment, something to that effect, certainly. And there was financial aspects to this. I mean, Gaddafi was believed to have somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 billion in gold and silver. And there were a chain of emails between Sidney Blumenthal and Hillary Clinton that talked about certain business deals. Then there was the gun running part of it that I described. And, you know, there was, again, this desire to give the impression that Libya had been a successful operation for the Obama administration. And so it was a kind of a series of issues that overlapped to some extent that led to this. And basically it was the, you know, Al-Qaeda, jihadis that were carrying this out. And were they directly taking orders from Hillary and Obama? No, I don't think so. I think they were doing their thing, but you know, they certainly allowed it to happen, and with ample warning. And again, all this with the election coming up, they had to calculate that in there, that if they were seen to have allowed this to happen, it could have been a disaster, you know. And remember the debate, Romney and Candy Crowley holding up the transcript and Romney backing down. I mean, there was so much going on with this. But, yeah, I mean, I think I've explained what our position is on this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I can't challenge the data, and I wouldn't. If I did, I would do it in a gentlemanly fashion. This is your data. If this is what you got, this is what you've got. Everybody brings a little something to the party, and eventually, I guess we'll find the truth.
Right. And one more thing: what you're referring to was the special mission compound. Often people call it the consulate. It wasn't a consulate. It was just set up as special mission. I mean, it's less than a consulate, and the CIA annex was 1 mile away.
Was certainly built pretty well to withstand that attack for that many hours, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like McInerney, they talk about if they could have just gotten the planes over there to buzz them, it would have saved lives and the people who were injured at the annex. And they have no doubt about that. If that could have easily been done, and it was a complete dereliction of duty that it wasn't done.
You know what's weird, Roger, is that we had an Air Force man on recently who was at Aviano, and he told us they were spun up, loaded with weapons, ready to rock and roll it, and they were told to stand down. Yeah.
That is the case. It's hard to explain, and you know how that makes sense for anybody.
Yeah.
That is what happened.
It's interesting. A captain was removed from command after Benghazi, but it was for undue behavior of an officer in Rota, Spain. But it wasn't a carrier. It was LSD Fort McHenry, if I have the nomenclature correct. So anyway. And the actual position and location of the ships in the area that could be researched are completely wrong. More distractions. This is, because the guilty are still among us. Somebody perpetrated this. I don't think it was a bunch of insane Middle Easterners that just decided, the Arab Spring's going on, let's attack and kill the infidels. I'm not buying it. And I'll tell you, the reason I'm not buying it is because they refuse to send those people any help. To me, Roger, that says it all.
Yeah.
Something was going on. Somebody's backside needed to be covered, and they weren't about to send any air support in there. I mean, I don't swim in those waters, so I don't know. There might have been many mitigating circumstances, but it doesn't look good. Now, let me ask you this, because I don't want to run out of time with you. This is a fascinating conversation. I thank you very much for being on tonight. The Sham January 6th Committee. What is going on with these people? Dozens and who knows how many people are rotting away in jail. No lawyer, no phone call, no trial date, no bond, no nothing. What is this? And what is it with this committee?
It is an outrage. It's a sham committee. And, you know, you knew it from the beginning when the only Republicans allowed on there were the ones that Pelosi approved of. Mm. And, you know, I think Kevin McCarthy made a good move to say, no, we're not going to give you others. I mean, we get to decide who the Republicans on there are. And so as a result of this, they have ignored all of the really big questions that should be asked and that there's plenty of evidence about. And I'm referring to, of course, the security. In other words, we now know that the Capitol Police, they had warnings weeks in advance that this was going to be a major event that needed security. We have the evidence that Trump did offer 20,000 National Guard troops to be there. They turned that down. And then even on the day of, and I'm sure your listeners have all seen the video of the Capitol Police pulling aside the barricades, waving people in. Many of these people who later have, you know, been in solitary confinement for 18 months for going in, having been waved in and all this. And then you have like Matt Rosenberg, he's probably the Project Veritas, where they went undercover and got the guy from the New York Times saying, oh yeah, there were tons of FBI agents there. So this was a follow-on to what had happened in Michigan with the Whitmer kidnapping, which all came out in the trials, that 12 of the 18 or so people involved were FBI informants or agents. And then the person who headed that came to Washington and headed up this January 6th thing. So, I mean, they're not asking because they don't want the right answers. And the big point is they keep saying, you know, Trump lied about this. Now, I think you and me and most people listening here tonight probably believe this was a stolen election.
We do.
And so, at the very least, and there's so much evidence of it, of irregularities and you know, not just the rigging, you know, Facebook, Zuckerberg, putting that close to $500 million in there. But then so many other things like, you know, Pennsylvania, you've got Arizona. You just have to look at the evidence to see that there were a lot of chicanery that went on there. So the point is, did Trump believe it was stolen, or was this a big lie? Did he just put this out there to rile the crowd and to get people to go in? And then the other thing is, what at the end of the day, when you look at it, everything he did was to go by the book. I mean, first he tried to get the state legislatures, he tried to get the courts to take it on, and he tried to get Congress to stop and look at the evidence. Don't just dismiss it because Bill Barr said there's no evidence, you know, the first week.
Yeah, he's no friend of us.
Right. And so you have all of that. And if it was, he truly believes it and it's not a big lie, then there's no crime even to be talked about, obstruction or any of that. So this is really, the whole thing is such an outrage on so many levels. And I don't care how many flags Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger wrap themselves in, it just comes across as just more propaganda and just promoted nightly on CNN and MSNBC. And they are so dishonest about all of this. They won't look at Ray Epps and all the people. I mean, there he's telling, oh, go into the Capitol, go into the Capitol. Just the evidence that this wasn't an effort to overthrow the government or a coup. I mean, if we want to talk about a coup, we know the one that happened against Trump. Because starting back with, Ratcliffe declassified Brennan's notes saying that, you know, Hillary wants to create this whole Russia story about Trump to take, to get people to quit talking about her emails. And, on and on, recently learned that after they fired Christopher Steele, quit paying him because they caught him leaking to the media, they hired Igor Danchenko, with his Russian connections and his history of lying, and he's about to go on trial as probably the last person to go on trial with Durham for lying to the FBI multiple times, but he was providing the information. He provided most of the information for the Steele dossier, which, again, you go to the Horowitz report, and you know there were like 17 false representations made to the FISA courts to get the initial warrants to start spying on Carter Page, and the whole thing was just a made-up attempt at Hillary's expense, you know, through Mark Elias, Perkins Coie, the whole thing, the Steele dossier, fraudulent all the way, and none of those people, I mean, they all get books, the place on CNN or MSNBC to, you know, preach to the rest of us, and it just really, you know, brings to mind the old line from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, where you say mendacity is a system we live in, and it's just so clear what these people did, the crimes they committed, and yet the only ones that are being prosecuted and pursued by the FBI are Trump and his allies, and anybody who, you know, if you're a parent, objecting to transgender ideology being taught in your schools, and you're considered somewhat of a terrorist. And it just, so the FBI has really lost its way big time. I mean,
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, well, I was just going to say, now the latest one here comes from LifeSite News. FBI raids home of Catholic pro-life speaker and author with guns drawn as his terrified kids watch. They finally go back and get the warrant because they say, well, he's going with us, whether we got a warrant or not. It's like, no, he's not. So somebody went back and showed him the warrant. And while the kids are screaming and all this, and I suspect that there are a lot of FBI agents out there. FBI Federal Bureau of Investigation has turned into firearms-bearing intimidators with a badge.
Yeah,
and I got a feeling a lot of these agents are feeling used. What do you think, Roger?
Well, absolutely, and that's why a number of them are starting to come to Jim Jordan at the House Judiciary Committee, and 15 or so have come. One of them was sort of outed this week, and he's now facing disciplinary action, but you know, I think, quite frankly, if the Republicans take control of the House, that a number of these FBI whistleblowers, you know, they're whistleblowers when they're, usually it's the other way around. But here, when they're going to go after the Biden administration and Christopher Wray. You got to put that one on Trump. He's the one that picked Wray as the head of the FBI. And you go back to the since 2019 when they had the Hunter Biden laptop and kept that hidden away all through 2020 in the election. And again, you know, just the new stuff that's come out about that Hunter Biden talking to the communist CCP people, trying to make deals to so they could purchase liquid natural gas plants in Louisiana. There were 21 deals. I don't know if John Solomon's been doing incredible reporting on this stuff at justthenews.com. And it's just there's so much that they just let, you know, the media ignore it and the FBI ignores it. And you just sit there shocked and that there's such a world of lies that are being pushed out by the media. And so many people, I'm sure we all have friends and family members who believe a lot of it. And it's really tragic.
Roger, I believe and hereby declare that mainstream media is public enemy number one. What do you think?
I agree. Look, that's why I went to work for Accuracy in Media, and I saw it. And you know, you mentioned earlier one of my documentaries, TWA 800. That was another place where the FBI was in there. And Hank Hughes, the chief investigator of the NTSB, spoke before one of Grassley's committees talking about the FBI and their hammering away at some of the evidence when they were putting the plane back together. I mean, there's so much to be upset about. And just when you watch this stuff, and yeah, the media, again, just watching what happened through that case and over again, I just saw it every day. That was the battles we took on at Accuracy in Media. And, you know, was honored that after Reed died, they made me the editor there. And so I was in a lot of those battles, you know, directly with the Washington Post and New York Times, and we're going at it all the time. So, yeah, I've been aware of this for a long time and had been since I started taking the AIM report way back in the 70s, which led me there eventually. So, anyway... But again, I urge people to take a look at our website, ccnationalsecurity.org. Look at our members, go under About, and you'll see all the members and their bios. You can check out the Benghazi and all the recent stuff we've done. And I think you'll find a feast there.
Well, thank you very much for everything that you tried to do for this country and for the people in it, of course. And I invite you to come back on the program anytime that you have time. This has been a very rewarding conversation. Again, I thank you for it.
Thank you so much.